You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Lincoln in the all-new 2024 Nautilus Hybrid. Featuring a customizable 48-inch panoramic display, available Revel audio system, and available perfect position front seats with active motion massage. Oh my God, the world isn't wide enough. Visit Lincoln.com to learn more. Some models, trims, and features may not be available or may be subject to change. Check with your local retailer for current information. Lincoln and Nautilus are trademarks of Ford or its affiliates.
Welcome to Through the Ringer. I'm your host, Tate Frazier. It is Tuesday morning, and it is so good to be back after a two-week hiatus with Cousin Sal. Sal, great to see you, man.
Yeah, who's got it better than you, Tate?
Nobody.
Is that what we're supposed to say? Yeah. Nobody, that's right.
I think that's,
congratulations.
That's officially a thing now. We all have to say that because Jim Harbaugh, in case you missed it, he's a national champion. So that is the world that we woke
up. Actually, hold on. The booth is telling me the title's been vacated.
Oh, no.
So, good while it lasted, though. So congratulations.
Well, that was fun. I enjoyed the game. I guess I did. The game was a pretty lopsided affair, to say the least, Sal. And maybe the biggest highlight was when I saw you. I think I saw you in the Jordan box in between Jeter and Stephen A. Smith. I'm not sure if you were in there, but that might have been the highlight of the game, other than Michigan absolutely dominating on the ground. What were your thoughts watching this game on Monday night?
Well, first of all, I was so excited for Derek Jeter and Michael Jordan to finally get to meet Stephen A. Smith. I mean, I know they've been waiting for such a long time, and what better time to happen than at the national championship so they could share a box together with that lunatic for 4 hours. But I thought it was a sloppy game, Tate. I thought it was a sloppy bet because I had watched it plus 4.5, and I bought a couple of points, and I thought I was looking smart. And I actually wasn't. I mean, they were, I actually thought you and I were texting and like, this is over. Why don't we, this is going to be a 40-point blowout. When you get run on like that, it really doesn't seem like you'll ever come back, even with Michael Penix at quarterback. And they fought back into the game and never made it back all the way, though.
Yeah, we'll talk about Penix here in a second, but I mean, the real star of this game was Donovan Edwards. And I'm not sure anyone had that on their bingo card, but going into it, if you had Donovan Edwards from Michigan to record a 10-plus yard rush, you could get that number at plus 700.
Why didn't you tell me this?
Oh, so sorry. God. Captain Hindsight did not give me the news. If you had Donovan Edwards to score a rushing touchdown, you could get it at plus 1,000. So if you bet on the third string running back to have a big night there in Houston, you were winning big money. So that was the story. It was the ground game, and Michigan really never looked back. I got close for a little bit, but Michael Penix, he could just not find the accuracy that he was pretty much known for the entire season. What were your thoughts on Penix and kind of his struggles throughout this game?
I thought he was being pressured. I think he was only sacked once, but through the two interceptions, the one coming out of halftime was the big one. Now, I know Michigan only kicked the field goal after that possession, but with 14:55 left, you throw the interception, seven having the ball to drive the field to tie. That is a huge momentum swing. And he was just like sailing the ball all night. It really just seemed like overthrows and just wasn't on his game. Not like, you know, he was off balance, never really got his footing down for some of these big throws. It was what it was. It was sloppy, like I said, going in. I don't know what this does to his draft stock. This is kind of like, I think he drops a little bit from this. It's funny, we're reading J.J. McCarthy is now a first-round quarterback, apparently. So I'm not sure what this game did. Everything got thrown out of whack, but I feel bad for Penix. But they went about as far as they probably should have gone.
Yeah, Penix in this game, 27 of 51 for 255 yards, one touchdown and two interceptions in this one. You mentioned the interception to open the second half. It was 17-10. Washington had the football. Felt like they could make it a game coming out of halftime in first place. They have a turnover, and then from there it just felt like it was all Michigan. Blake Corum was the real star in this game, 21 carries, 134 yards, two touchdowns. But J.J. McCarthy was the one that gets all the credit, even though he didn't even throw a touchdown or rush for a touchdown in this game. But that is the world we live in with these quarterbacks. The real star, though, Jim Harbaugh, what are your thoughts on him first dodging the Gatorade bath and all the conversation now about what his next job may be? And a lot of people think it's not going to be at Michigan, even though he just won the national championship.
You know, I joked about it and that it should be vacated, but the fact that he didn't get hit with the Gatorade, also another reason it should be vacated. I don't feel it's official
yeah.
until you get that purple and blue on you. really not going to be official at all in my book. But I think he's gone. All I hear is, hey, you better be prepared to pay him some money because, you know, a lot of these guys do this for free otherwise. But no, I do think he's gone. I think only Tom Osborne left after a national championship in Nebraska back in the late 90s to just actually step down. But I think there's going to be some big money out there for Harbaugh. It'd be funny if he takes his brother's job. What a blindside that would be.
Yeah, that was crazy to see John Harbaugh on the sideline. He has no idea his brother might be trying to get his job in the NFL.
Right.
But, shout out to the Harbaugh brothers. We're about a decade from the Harbaugh Super Bowl, and now you got both those guys. Potentially, both brothers could win their respective championships this season. So there's some good money on the Harbaugh family right now. Let's talk about next season, because that's what we like to do. We like to forecast. We like to look at the futures here. The next national champion, Sal. Right now, Georgia is the favorite at plus 350. You got Alabama at plus 550. Ohio State plus 800, Texas plus 850, and the reigning national champs, Michigan, at plus 1,000. Is there anybody right now that you have smart money on that you kind of buy into the hype for next year?
Yeah, Coach Prime and the Colorado Rockies. Where are they? Where are they on this list, Tate? Coach Prime, he owns September. He just has to figure out the other months. No, I'm going to be boring here and take Georgia plus 350. I know that 10-1 number for Michigan stands out, but you really don't know what you're getting with Harbaugh or filling in the pieces. I looked at Georgia. 11 of their current players are projected to go pro, including Bowers. But the one thing is they have four five-star quarterbacks under scholarship, including Carson Beck. You know, something we said coming into this year is Michigan was the only top Big Ten team to have their quarterback situated, right? We didn't know about McCord, who was going to quarterback for Penn State or Ohio State with, like I said, McCord. And there's something to be said. You get a head start on everything when you have your quarterback set. George, I just don't think Kirby Smart's going to duck out 2 years in a row. They have Texas, Bama, and Clemson. Those are the tough ones on their schedule. They could have two losses and probably still make the playoffs.
And there's people that are kind of upset still that the defending national champs, when I'm talking about Georgia, the two-time defending champs going into the season, didn't have a chance to at least make the playoff and make a fight. Obviously, if we had a 12-team playoff, they would have been in the playoff. That's what we'll have next year. So there's hope and there's optimism for the future that we might have a better bowl system in place to actually, you know, acknowledge who the championship is or the champion is. So we'll see how that goes. Look at the number one pick, Sal. Right now, Caleb Williams is the heavy favorite, minus 650. Drake May there, my North Carolina Tar Heel, at plus 470. Marvin Harrison Jr., plus 1,500. Michael Penix Jr., who did not help himself in the national championship game, at plus 6,000. Is it a foregone conclusion that Caleb Williams is going to be the number one pick, regardless of who actually makes that pick, Sal?
You know, it's funny. We talk about draft stock dropping in this one game. Penix going all the way to the finals and playing poorly or subpar, at least, hurts him. But Caleb Williams, no matter how bad that defense was and how bad, you know, how many games they lost, it didn't really matter. He's been number one for months, right? Starting probably in August all the way till now. He's a huge favorite. I almost think, though, there is a little value in Drake May, because if it was going to be the Bears at number one, I'm like, okay, there's too many comparisons to Mahomes. They already passed on Mahomes. They're not going to do it again with Caleb Williams. But if it's not the Bears picking one, maybe someone does like Drake May. So maybe someone, maybe someone trades up. Maybe even Washington trades up and gets Drake May. So I think there is a value in that number.
Yeah, and the crazy part about that is Drake May was the backup for Sam Howell in college, and now he can end up taking his job at the NFL level. So there's some drama that could be had between two North Carolina Tar Heels right now. I would hate for that to happen, but I would love to see Drake May go number one, be the first number one pick for the North Carolina Tar Heels. And now we've gotten to a point, Sal, where we get to play one of my favorite games. Are you excited? Overreact and underreact.
Yes. All right. Okay. I wasn't sure if that was the game, but yeah. All right. Good. As long as it's that, let's go.
Yeah, it's the game. And we got Wild Card Weekend coming up, but we're going to start with a college football one for you, Sal. Georgia would have won the title this season in a 12-team playoff. Is that an overreaction or an underreaction? Do you believe?
Oh, man, that's close. I'm going to say overreaction, as much as I know I just picked them to win it next year. But listen, I think this would have been the perfect year for a six-teamer, right? If Florida State, if you could get them distracted and never invite them to even the six-team tournament and just add Oregon and Georgia to the four that we already saw, I think we get good matchups all the way through. As far as next year, if there were actually this year, if there would be a six seed, they would probably go up against someone like Mississippi and win. And then they'd have to go up against a three seed, which is what, this Washington team that we saw? No.
Texas.
Two, three. Texas. I don't know. Texas. Texas would be the three. I think they win all the way up until Michigan, and then it's a tough game, much like it was tonight. Michigan probably wins but a close one. They'd be favored, Georgia, in every one of those games.
Yeah, that is the crazy part. Vegas basically said Georgia would have been favored against Washington or Michigan, and Michigan ends up being the national champion, and they don't even play Georgia. So that's just how college football has worked for quite some time. But again, shout out to the Michigan Wolverines, the national champions this season. Let's talk about a head coach that everybody wants to talk about, Bill Belichick. Bill Belichick ended his Patriots run at its lowest point, Sal. Is that an overreaction or an underreaction?
That is an overreaction because he's going to top it next year. He's going to go 2-15 with this team. They're going to find out he was stealing memorabilia from the clubhouse and selling it. Yes, and that's going to be – that will be rock bottom. No, I don't think it gets any worse than losing to Trevor Siemian at home and putting in the year that they did. You know what? He should have – I know it's hindsight. We talked about it. He should have left the year before Brady left, and then – he would have looked like an absolute genius.
Yeah, well, we know he wants to break Shula's record. He does not want to be number two in wins all time. So I do think that there is some football ahead for Bill Belichick. And honestly, him going out in a blizzard felt very fitting. It was a very chilly exit for Bill Belichick with his time with the New England Patriots. Let's talk about your guy, Dak Prescott.
Yeah.
Prescott, Sal, is the real MVP this season. Overreaction or underreaction?
It's tough. I don't want to say underreaction, but he's, you know, I go back and forth between he and CD Lamb. CD just been awesome, but I can't imagine this team without either one of them. But I'm not going to complain. Lamar was better in more big games, and I guess that's what wins you the award. It didn't matter what Dak did. It's funny, Dak gets crap for beating up on Washington. It's like, well, Lamar sat out the last week, so I don't know. We have to still favor him, but fine. You know what? Give it a big Dom. I think, what were they, 1-5, the Eagles, without him?
Yeah.
I think he should make a case.
Yeah, bring Dom back for the playoff game. That would be a smart move for everybody. We'd love to see that. Dennis Allen, head coach of the New Orleans Saints, deserved to get punched by former Falcons coach Arthur Smith. Overreaction or underreaction?
No. Tate, it's an overreaction. Dennis Allen, he did not call for the code red. Didn't you see? They disobeyed an order, and luckily no one got killed. I it would have been funny if Arthur Smith, after 3-7-10 years in an embarrassing Week 18, punched the wrong guy for doing this. So, I believe me, Simmons brought it up. It's hilarious. It could have happened. It should happen. But I think for Arthur Smith's sake, it's lucky it didn't.
Do you think Arthur Smith knew he was fired going into that handshake? Because he definitely acted like a man who was okay with his job, you know, being let go at that point. I do think he may have known something because he came out full guns a-blazing.
Yeah, I'm surprised he was even there to see the handoff at the end for the touchdown. I figured he'd be cleaning up his crap somewhere in between the third quarter and the fourth.
Yeah, they're driving him to the airport already down there in NOLA to get him out of there. Shout out to the Falcons fans. Hopefully they can have a new head coach, and it might be Bill Belichick because I've heard he's pretty close to Florida, so we'll see what happens there. Speaking of Florida, let's talk about the Dolphins. The Dolphins are the worst team in the playoffs, Sal. Overreaction or underreaction?
I see what you're getting at here, Tate, but I'm going to say overreaction. Now, this version of the Dolphins team with the defensive injuries, and we don't know if Mostert or Waddle is playing, pretty bad. Definitely top three, bottom three, actually, in terms of greatness for these playoff teams. But I still feel like, I can't believe I'm saying this, Big Dom's Eagles are the least trustworthy out of anybody. I don't know where the defense went. We don't know if Jalen Hurts is injured. We don't know if A.J. Brown even wants to play for this team anymore. They are a shell of themselves and the least trustworthy and somehow a favorite. We're going to get to that in the line look-aheads, I think. That's one of your favorite games to play.
It's second favorite game. Yeah, it's going to be a good one.
Yeah.
Can't talk about it. But I think that's a great pick because the Eagles look like a mess right now. Last one, Sal. Jake Browning will be a starter week one next season in the NFL. Overreaction or underreaction?
Oh, NFL. I thought you meant UFL. They might be calling for Jake Browning. No, listen, he did a serviceable job. And by the way, you know, I think the Bengals should try to lock him on the contract. You have to have two good quarterbacks. And Jake Browning, knowing the system now, could bring this team to the playoffs. And a healthy Joe Burrow will definitely bring this team to the playoffs. So I don't know that he starts, but he definitely, you know, I think the Bengals should try to give him as much money as they can. I know they have to pay Jamar. I know Chase is looking for an extension and some others, T. Higgins, but make it work.
Yeah, we'll see what happens with Joe Burrow's box, by the way. It looks like Jake Browning is squatting there with the entire family, so we'll have to figure that out for next season. Let's do some...
His girlfriend stole the show. Google Jake Browning girlfriend luxury box. Sorry, Taylor, you lose.
Yeah, that was the big win. That was actually the best box sighting of the weekend. Shout out to Brent Musburger. I know he loved it.
There you go.
Let's do some prop culture, Sal. Let's do the riverboat. Let's call up the captain, and he's talking about Tiger Woods. After 27 years, he is no longer going to be with Nike. So the question is... What is the next biggest celebrity endorsement loss for a brand? And we got the odds in front of us. Nike and Michael Jordan is the favorite at minus 250. We got Herbalife and Ronaldo there at 4-1. We got Wheaties and Simone Biles at 7-1. We got Icy Hot and Shaq at 25-1. And we got the field at even odds. Who are you taking, Sal, here with the Riverboat Captain?
I like Icy Hot. I like just the way Shaq says Icy Hot. Oh, get the Icy Hot, put the Icy Hot on. But I'm going to go off the board, field, even odds, Floyd Mayweather. You hear about these Hublot watches, these luxury watches, Tate?
Yeah, Hublot. That's what they say.
Hublot, is that what it is?
Yeah, Hublot.
I didn't know we could say it like that. Okay. I would like to see him box with one of those on, just a giant one around the glove. But just in general, stick with Floyd. Don't ever let him go as a pitch man. I mean, you get someone to buy you the watch and you too will have a toilet made out of $1,000 bills. So with Floyd.
That's a great one. I'm going to go with Frank Thomas and Nugenix. I feel like I see that commercial all the time. And without Frank Thomas, I just don't think I buy into the product of Nugenix. So shout out to Frank Thomas. Shout out to the Riverboat Captain for that prop culture. We had a lot of fun with that one. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to do some line look aheads for Wild Card Weekend. We'll be right back.
Yeah, my favorite game.
This episode is brought to you by NetSuite by Oracle. The less your business spends, the more margin of money you have. I think that's pretty obvious for everyone, but actually doing it, that's easier said than done because the cost of everything is going up these days. So do the smart thing. Switch to NetSuite by Oracle. It's the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth so you can easily reduce costs and headaches. NetSuite specifically helps by reducing IT costs since it lives in the cloud with no hardware required, and cutting the costs of maintaining multiple systems since everything you need is on one suite. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. See for yourself how effective NetSuite can be and try it out today. And by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/ringer. That is netsuite.com/ringer.
Welcome back to Through the Ringer here with Cousin Sal, and it is officially Wild Card Weekend. Sal, we made it. Can you believe it? We're finally here.
It's the weekend. It feels like Tuesday morning, but I'll take your word for it. You're spry, and you're more on top of these things than I am.
That's true. We do have a few more days before we get to Wild Card Weekend, but I'm fired up, and I'm ready to talk about it. So let's do some line look-aheads, and let's start with the Cleveland Browns. This is the Saturday 4:30 p.m. game on the East Coast. We're going to take the Cleveland Browns against the Houston Texans. Texans at home, but +2.5 in this one. Who do you like in this game, Sal?
Well, first of all, if you told me in the beginning of the year that the Browns would have to go through 5 quarterbacks, I think Driscoll was the 5th quarterback, and they would make the playoffs, and they would be a favorite on the road, I would have probably said the F curse, Tate. I never, ever use that, and I wouldn't direct it to you or
anything. Forget about it. Yeah.
Yes, forget about it, that F curse. But this is the Shakey's Bowl. Houston's very familiar with this spot. The 7 times they've made the playoffs, they have played the early Saturday game. We watch it at Shakey's every year. They can't be favored because they got slaughtered. I think it was Christmas Eve by 2 touchdowns to Cleveland. Cleveland was again on the road that time, but it was Davis Mills. It was Case Keenum. Different story. I saw this tick to 3 and then some sharp money came in on Houston. It's tough to make the better quarterback at home an underdog. I think it stays inside 3 points. I think it's a fair line at 2.5.
And are we buying into the Joe Flacco train just a little bit too much, Sal? It does feel like there's so much confidence in the fact that Joe Flacco is just going to go on the road in the playoffs and just beat anybody. And one of these guys he's playing is obviously the rookie of the year, CJ Stroud. So I do think that we've kind of maybe jumped the shark a little bit with our Joe Flacco belief. Am I crazy to feel that?
No, you're not crazy. And the way to confirm that is I can look at my ledger for futures bets, and I seem to have the Browns to win the Super Bowl and the Browns to do great things. I'm like, oh, yeah, they still have to get past this first round game and then many others. It is very strange. And also we're looking ahead to the Ravens, right? It's like, oh, it's got to be Browns Ravens. It's got to be Flacco going back into Baltimore. But we're not really yet close to that happening, even though you think we've hit Wild Card Weekend. We haven't done that either
yet. Yeah, everybody is locked in on the idea that the script writers are ready for a Joe Flacco, Lamar Jackson battle in Baltimore. So they've gotten ahead of themselves. But first, they have to beat the Houston Texans. And I have to remind people that T.J. Yates was the quarterback who won the first playoff game for the Houston Texans. So anything is possible when it comes to the Houston Texans. Texans in the playoffs. The next game we have on Saturday night, this is 8 p.m., we have the Miami Dolphins, the 6 seed, taking on the 3 seed, Kansas City Chiefs. Kansas City favored in this game, -3.5, and it's going to be on Peacock, so get your subscriptions out, folks. This is going to be a fun game. Who do you like in this one, Sal?
Well, how bad did the Dolphins F up this game against the Bills? If they win, they're the 2 seed, and everyone's like, well, it may not matter. It doesn't matter. You don't have to go through Baltimore the first week. Like, it matters. It's expected to be 18 below wind chill in Kansas City. I don't know that it favors one team or the other, but it's hard to imagine that it favors the Dolphins, and they're comfortable with that. This opened around 3, Tate. 3.5 seems right. The old Chiefs would have laid a lot more than 3. You know, the most frustrating two teams, I think, in the league offensively. I feel like they should be putting up 35 and 40, and we'll probably see a 10-7 game in the fourth quarter. So 3.5 seems right, but also it seems like they're begging you to take the Chiefs a little. What do you think?
Yeah, the Dolphins 0-10 when it's below 40 degrees. So I think that's something to keep in mind. So if they play in a cold weather game, they are not going to be happy campers. I do like the rest versus rust argument going into this game, where people are talking about the Chiefs rested and they shouldn't have rested, and the Miami Dolphins are going to be more prepared. But I'm worried about those injuries. I mean, even Bradley Chubb is a guy going back a couple of weeks, getting out for this Dolphins defense. I think there's a lot more questions than answers when it comes to Miami. And it does feel like the Chiefs win this game. But this year's just been weird with the Chiefs. It doesn't feel like any time they're supposed to win, they do what they're supposed to do. So I'm a little hesitant to buy all the way in on Kansas City, but it does feel like being at home, they're going to handle business. They're going to get it done. So,
well, you have to buy all the way in on Peacock. I don't know if you've done that yet, Tate. You touched on it in the beginning. This is a separate streaming network that it's going to air on, obviously a subsidiary of NBC. I don't know anyone over 60, except for maybe Mike Lombardi, who's going to be able to figure this out, how to get this on Peacock. And I'm sorry to you, Lombardi, if you're not 60 yet, but you look terrible for 59, if that's the case.
Lombardi's going to be one of those people tweeting about how dumb it is that this game is on Peacock, and America cannot watch Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce play in a primetime playoff game. So get ready for that. It's going to be fun. The next game in the AFC, this is Sunday at 1 o'clock. We have the Pittsburgh Steelers coming in as the 7 seed, taking on the Buffalo Bills in Buffalo. Bills -9.5, getting a lot of love from Vegas in this game. How do you handicap Buffalo here, and do you like them winning this game, Sal?
Yeah, and it went down from 10. It was 10 earlier today. Great job by the Bills, going from an 11 seed a couple weeks ago. It was late December, they were 11 seed, to hosting a game as a near double-digit favorite and as a 2 seed. It's kind of crazy. And good job by the Steelers for finally figuring it out. It took them, what, 15, 16 weeks to figure out that Mason Rudolph was the best of that three-headed white monster quarterback. Sorry, I know you're a Trubisky Tate truther in there, but I think they got the right guy in there. But the truth is, this is about TJ Watt, if he could play or not, if he could be effective when he plays. It doesn't look good. It's a sprain in the MCL. He is the most important defender to his team. I don't know if there's an award for that, but he is absolutely, I mean, they are 1-10 without him. His absence adds at least 2.5 or 3 points to the spread. A nice journey for the Steelers, but it doesn't look good right now.
Yeah, and Buffalo is one of those teams where it feels like the home field advantage really matters to this group. And you saw it in Miami. They took over that stadium, and it felt like a home game for them in the last game of the week. They win the division. It has been a roller coaster of a season. We thought that it was dead to rights at one point. They fire Ken Dorsey. They're 6-1 since they fired Dorsey, so he obviously changed things around with this team. So Buffalo got a big number to cover, but obviously a lot of momentum going into the playoffs. Now we're going to switch to the NFC. We got the Green Bay Packers. This game is Sunday at 4:30 Eastern. Green Bay Packers taking on your Dallas Cowboys. This is the Mike McCarthy showdown here. We got Cowboys -7.5 in this game. How are you feeling about this one, Sal?
Yeah, I pegged it at 7.5, and it opened at 7. Now back up to 7.5, as you said. And I don't know, we're going into this game. You don't want to go into a game, a playoff game, against the hottest quarterback in the league, right? That's probably one of the things that you want to check off. Okay, we're fine. But Jordan Love is just that, 18 touchdowns and one interception in the last 8 games. And multiple brain cells, which is the first time a starting Packer quarterback has had that in almost 2 decades. So that's great. I think the line is fair. Cowboys aren't going to let him run around like he's used to in the last few weeks. sit in the pocket all day and just throw to these overachieving receivers. I'm speaking too highly of the Cowboys now. Great game for Mike McCarthy. Let's pray it's not close with 2 minutes left. Otherwise, his head is going to explode that he blows it to the Packers.
Yeah, and this is one of those games where you do feel like Dak has to get this done for the fan base to get off his back a little bit. So we're pulling for the Dallas Cowboys. I'll be pulling for them. Do you think Aaron Rodgers is going to be watching this game, Sal? Will he be pulling against the Green Bay Packers? Who do you think he has in this game? I mean, this is obviously a legacy game a little bit.
I don't care if he's pulling for them. He should pull on an electrical wire in the middle of the street in a rainstorm. That's what he should pull on.
Yeah, that's a good one. There you go. Next game. That was good. Next one, we got Sunday. This is Sunday night, 8:15 Eastern. We got the Los Angeles Rams taking on the Detroit Lions. Lions -3.5 in this game. I feel like everybody I've seen, Sal, says this is the Matthew Stafford game. But I think this is the Jared Goff game. This is a team that went to the Super Bowl with Goff, that traded him away. He was their number one pick. He was a California kid. They ship him off to Detroit to basically say, we'll see you later, we'll see you never. Then they win a Super Bowl with Matthew Stafford. How much does Goff have to prove in this game, and do you believe in the Lions?
You know, I hadn't thought about it, but you're right. Everyone's pointing at Stafford. He has to feel Goff underappreciated at this level, and it's back-to-back great storylines because they basically traded for each other. I think it's right around 3 points. I think we're also buying into the narrative like, oh boy, the Lions, they're going to blow it, and it's going to be even worse than blowing it because they're doing it against Matthew Stafford. But remarkable job by the Rams getting this far. I think I picked them to have the fewest wins in the NFL, which probably inspired them. Sean McVay is like a solid playoff-ready squad. They did great with the rookies. They did great with the draft overall. Aside from that, very tough spot for Detroit. I think they would have rather have drawn the Packers, even though it was a division game in the playoffs, to be honest.
Yeah, absolutely. And now you have a situation where, you know, the guy who built his career in Detroit comes into Detroit, and there's going to be some mixed feelings there. I feel like if you're Matthew Stafford, if you got a late game situation, maybe you lay an egg a little bit and you let Detroit get a playoff win because it's been a long time coming, nice. And you won a Super Bowl. So that would be nice.
That should be on the exit papers. It should have been, you know, in other businesses, they have covenant not to compete. They should have done that. Like, if you ever, ever play us in the playoffs, it'll never happen. Don't worry about it. But you got to lay down.
Yeah, you got to lay down for us because we've been tortured for quite some time. So shout out to the Detroit fans. I know they're happy to be in the playoffs. That'll be a fun game. Monday night is the last game of Wild Card Weekend. This is going to be at 8 o'clock Eastern. We got the Philadelphia Eagles, the much maligned Philadelphia Eagles, taking on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Buccaneers +2.5 in this game. Jalen Hurts, there's questions if he's going to be healthy and be able to play. Most people are saying he will. What do you see here, Sal? Do you think the Buccaneers can win this game at home?
I definitely guess I do. I don't know what to think of this game. I'm glad it's the last one because I probably won't have enough money left to bet on it, and I have no inkling to do it either here. I thought 2.5 was a little high. I'd be surprised if it went to 3. It should stay inside of 3. You know, Baker is banged up. Clearly, if you watch them against the Panthers, couldn't get the job. Well, he got the job done. They won 9-0, but the Panthers basically beat themselves. But he missed some throws to Mike Evans. Definitely a problem with that shoulder. And as you mentioned, Hurts is going to have a problem with the finger. This is just a mess. I mean, you're really just betting. It is as a coin toss, as much a coin toss of a game as you're going to get in the playoffs. Would you like?
Yeah, I guess I would take the Buccaneers in this game just because the Eagles look like they quit on their coach a little bit, but it is the playoffs. Jalen Hurts, he always has the right answer, and he says that they're focused on the playoffs, and if he can play, that obviously gives them an opportunity, and they are the better team, right? The NFC South is terrible, so, you know, the Eagles should have a chance to win this game, but I don't have much faith after what I've seen the past couple of weeks, and Matt Patricia continues to be the answer on the defensive side of the football, and that is cause for big concern from my vantage point. What's your long shot Super Bowl matchup? What is something that if you close your eyes, you see possible as a potential Super Bowl matchup?
Well, you know, on Simmons' podcast, we gave out the Browns and 49ers. They imagine if the Browns go and upset the Ravens. But this is what I'm talking about, Tate. I have too much capital on the Browns, and who knows if they're even going to get by that first game. But if we're talking long shots here, I have Rams Ravens. Why not at 53-1, right? Ravens, that's the team you don't want to play in the AFC. Maybe they get the monkey off their back. They win the whole thing and they get all the way through to the AFC championship, which they haven't been able to do for a few years. And if you're Sean McVay, you've already been there before. You know how this works. You're going to be an underdog all the way through. But 53-1 is not bad in my eyes.
I like that. I like those odds a lot. And I also think the Rams are a team that could be scary just because of the head coach they have. Sean McVay, he's been there before. He's seen it. And he's got this team to 2 Super Bowls. So why not number 3? So I like that pit. I don't know what the odds are, but I would like to take the Ravens to get to the Super Bowl and then lose. This feels like a Cam Newton, Lamar Jackson season for me, where the Ravens get there, everyone gets excited, they think it's going to be their time, and it all goes sideways in the end. And I don't know if
there's a name for that, Tate. It's called the conference championship. So you like them to win the it's plus 125.
Yeah,
it's
but they're bad. The favorite. Yeah. So I wouldn't say it's a long shot, but I wish I could get specific where they make it to the Super Bowl and they lose. But you know, we'll leave it there. Shout out to Lamar Jackson. Shout out to the Ravens. Let's do a Tate debate, Sal, before let's I let you get out of here. We talked about all the good teams that are in the playoffs and have had good years. Now let's talk about the worst of the worst, my Carolina Panthers. So I asked you, Sal, a simple question. Is this Panther season the lowest point for Carolina pro sports? And I'll give you some options here, that things that have happened when it comes to the bottom of the barrel in Carolina sports. We got John Casey's out of bounds kickoff in Super Bowl 38. That was a tough one. We got the Jerry Richardson scandal. That was, not good. He was running the team really well at one time. The Bobcats going 7-59 in the lockout season 2011-2012. That was embarrassing. The Hornets moving to New Orleans in 2002. Miss Teen USA South Carolina giving her interview back in 2007. And,
best.
Yeah, great moment in time. The Durham Bulls still not being a major league team after all the success of Bull Durham. So those are just some a few I have off the top of my head, Sal. What would you have? Do you think this is the bottom of the barrel for Carolina sports?
Well, I don't think so. I think you kind of listed the one that I would pick here. The lowest point in Carolina pro sports was Super Bowl 38, and it did involve John Casey, but it wasn't him kicking the ball out of bounds. It was me, yours truly. I don't know if you know this, Tate. I went to media day dressed as John Casey. I had the jersey on, and I had the number, and I went around and I did interviews, and many people weren't fooled, but like a lot of the members of the foreign press were all over me because I would talk to anybody. And I was not your typical interviewee. I was talking about how maybe we were at the clubs, maybe some dance clubs, provocative dance clubs the night before. And I don't even really care who wins on Sunday. And then the real John Casey got hold of this. He heard about this, and he is a man very close to God. And he was not up for my shenanigans. And as a result, I was banned from media day for about 7 or 8 years. In fact, I think that's why our producer, Jack, is having trouble getting us a credential this year.
I cannot believe that John Casey has such sway. I mean, this guy, he can hold you out, block you out, blackball you. I mean, my goodness, I did not know John Casey could do this. But we needed you to kick that ball off, Sal. And I think
I clearly got in his head. Play.
Yeah,
right? Yeah, I got in his head, right? I think Janet Jackson had a weird night that night, too. Yeah, what a crazy outing that
was. So Tom Brady is not the GOAT unless you dress up as John Casey, is what I'm
saying. Thank you.
So,
thank you. Finally, someone recognized me.
That is the real story here. Sal, you're the best. We're excited for Wildcard Weekend. Where can we find all your amazing work here at The Ringer?
Cousin Sal's Winning Weekend. I'm going to have Harry on, one of your favorites, and Peter King will be there, and Ringer Wise Guys coming up on Saturday and Sunday, and Against All Odds podcast. Listen there.
All right, there you have it, Sal. You're the best. Thanks so much for being on the show. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to have the Ringer's very own Brian Curtis join us to break down all things national championship and beyond. We'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Anytime Fitness. We're not all professional athletes, but we all have health goals. That's why Anytime Fitness gives you access to personalized plans and support from a coach. Plus, you can track your training, nutrition, and recovery progress with the Anytime Fitness app, just like the pros. With 24/7 access to more than 5,000 gyms worldwide, get more from your gym membership. Visit anytimefitness.com to try it for free today. Terms, conditions, restrictions all apply. See website for details.
Welcome back to Through the Ringer. Joining us now, you know him from the press box and theringer.com. He's back on the show, and he is Brian Curtis. Brian, great to see you, man. I'm happy to see that you're holding up after your Texas Longhorns struggled in the playoff, about a week ago at this point.
I've been wandering around Bourbon Street a lot, Tate, but I'm back. I'm here.
Yeah.
I'm here for you.
Well, I appreciate it. Hopefully no live shots on Bourbon Street, to keep us entertained. But it's been quite a ride here throughout the college football season. We do have a national champion, and I do want to start there because Michigan gets their first national championship, their first sole national championship. They've claimed 11 national championships in the past, the most recent one back in 1997. But how much is that kind of washing over you now that Michigan, Jim Harbaugh, they're the actual national champions in college football?
It seems really weird because Michigan's always one of those schools that had a big number, as you say, of claimed national championships, but just had not won many at all in my lifetime. I remember, you know, as a kid, Bo Schembechler, that legendary coach, never won a national championship. Can't say that about Jim Harbaugh. He's got one.
Yeah, 9 seasons it took for Jim Harbaugh to get his first national championship. And this team, you know, kind of decided that the world was against him. There was all the shirts. There was all, you know, the garb about Michigan versus everybody. There was the cheating scandal that came out with Connor Stallions. I mean, how much of a media story was this Michigan team? And did they kind of, you know, send a message to all those doubters and detractors by going and actually winning the big game on Monday night?
So it's funny, every college football team, including Washington, is it's us versus the world. Nobody is giving us any respect. But I was reading a book the other day, and I was reading about the Detroit Pistons, the bad boy Pistons, who would, you know, Bill Laimbeer give somebody an elbow in the paint, and then they say, hey, it's us versus everybody. This Michigan team's a little bit like that, right? We had a sign-stealing scandal, and now everybody hates us. You know, they hate us. It's us versus everybody. Well, yeah, it is. Of course it's you versus everybody. The sign-stealing scandal. Come on, Jim Harbaugh, come on. But they embraced it, and they won. So give them credit for that.
Yeah, give them credit. And from the start of this game, I mean, it was dominance on the ground. This offensive line for Michigan, they go down, that, you know, 9 plays, 84 yards, touchdown. And immediately, if you're sitting there on the couch with your friends and family, you hit somebody and say, this game might be a long night for the Washington Huskies. What were your thoughts just watching this Michigan team? And what does it kind of say for the program and where it stands in the Big Ten? Because the SEC obviously gets all the credit this time of the year traditionally, but it does feel like this was a Big Ten championship game, so to speak, as we look forward into the future.
It really does. It's a credit to them that they were able to bring Washington into their game rather than try to play Washington's game. I know Texas got caught up in the ladder last week, but I think when you look at this Michigan team, I think a lot of us, like me, were kind of lulled to sleep all year because you looked around and you say, you know, I don't see that Michael Penix type playmaker. I don't see that wide receiver, that dynamic running back who is just off the charts, all world good. But the fact is, they do have those players, and Michigan's starters up from top to bottom are all really good, right? It's a team without many weak links at all. And this is a team that lost their best starting offensive lineman a couple of weeks ago to injury. I mean, they are just a complete loaded roster. They're one of those kind of national champions, rather than the ones that have a couple of 5 stars at key positions.
And we've seen in college sports, right, the head coaches tend to be the stars. Even though Blake Corum in this game rushes for 134 yards and gets 2 touchdowns, and Donovan Edwards also gets 2 touchdowns that were electric early in this game. At the end of the game, they're talking to J.J. McCarthy, the quarterback, and of course we're talking about Jim Harbaugh. And that's what I want to talk about with you, Brian Curtis, because have we ever seen a situation where leading into a national championship game, all we're talking about is what is the next job for the current head coach of the team that just won the national championship? How fascinating was the coverage of Jim Harbaugh this entire season?
It's so wild, right? Because usually this is the coach saying, I won a national championship. Now I can accomplish all the things I want to do. Now the program's built. Now my recruiting is going to take off. And we hear that he may be looking at the NFL. I think the Harbaugh thing is hilarious because you saw all those interviews he was giving the last couple of weeks before the bowl games, before the playoff games. And he was kind of going back to the old fun Jim Harbaugh that used to be on Twitter. Remember that Harbaugh of like 8 years ago, something like that, where he's like, you know, if Jesus was a recruit, he'd be a 5-star. You know, like, wait, we're back to wacky Jim Harbaugh instead of that kind of, you know, Jim Harbaugh involved in the scandal guy America loves to hate. So I just thought it was very funny to cycle back through those old personalities. And, you know, it was kind of fun, I guess, for what it was.
Having John Harbaugh and Jim Harbaugh, we're about a decade from the Super Bowl back in 2013 when they played each other, the Niners and the Ravens, brother versus brother. How much is that a story that the media loves to eat up, the fact that these two brothers are going head-to-head on the biggest stage?
You saw, ESPN just loved that shot of John walking over to Jim, which was really weird, wasn't it, Tate? Like that he was kind of surprising him on the sideline during the national championship. Yeah, oh, what are you doing here? Hey, great to see you. Let's hug it up right here, right on this. Like, is this a good time to do this when Jim's kind of locked in on winning the biggest game of his college football life? No, the media loves it, of course. And, like, it's not crazy that they would play in another big game because they're both good coaches.
Yeah, and Jim Harbaugh, he's got quite a knack for dodging the Gatorade baths. He did get taken on the second bath. We did see that. But again, wins the national championship, gives Michigan fans what they've been fiending for you know, over a century at this point. So hail to the victor. Shout out to Michigan. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about your Texas Longhorns, the future of college football, and the uncertainty of the Pac-12 as we move forward in the world of big-time college football. We'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Empower. You got money questions like, can I retire early? What are my best savings options? Can I afford to pay for my kids' education? Luckily, Empower has all the answers. With Empower's real-time dashboard and real live conversations, you get clarity on your real-life financial goals. So join 18 million Americans and Empower what's next. Start today at empower.com. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more. Sponsored by Empower, not an endorsement or a statement of satisfaction by a client.
Welcome back to Through the Ringer, here with the Ringer's very own Brian Curtis. And Brian Curtis has put on his media cap because we're going to do a nice little year in review here. I love the props, Brian. I love to see that. And I love when we get a capital J journalist in the room. So appreciate you stepping up to the plate for us. We needed to see that.
I'm kind of the prop comic of the Ringer. That's what I've emerged as over the years. So I'm happy to help.
Yeah, I like when we do things for the bit. You know, there's a lot of people that do things for the brand or for the boys, but for here, we do it for the bit, and we love to see that. Let's talk about Texas season in review. This is obviously a program near and dear to your heart. Do you feel good about making it to the Sugar Bowl? Because obviously, there's no consolation prizes in big-time college football, but it felt like the next step for the Sark era there in Austin, Texas. Do you feel that way as a fan? Do you feel good about the fact that you almost had a chance to go and win the Sugar Bowl and make it to the national championship game?
I really did, because they felt like they got there a year or two early. So it wasn't, oh my gosh, we're at the mountaintop, we have to win it right now. I think everybody was pretty happy to be there. And also the way that game had unfolded in the Sugar Bowl, where Texas was chasing Washington the whole game. They almost stole at the end, but it never felt like, hey, we're going to win this game. And, oh, it got taken away from us. So I was pretty good with the whole thing, and I think most Texas fans were too.
There was a lot of coverage, obviously, of Arch Manning going into the season. There was a lot of conversations about, you know, the fact that Arch was going to eventually get the keys to the program. We saw during media day, after Quinn Ewers gets all the questions, the media, you know, the scrum goes over and they, you know, basically circle Arch Manning like, you know, he's Peyton Manning or Eli Manning. How much are we keeping an eye on the coverage of Arch Manning, and what do you think that's going to look like when he eventually does become the quarterback there at Texas?
It's absolutely fascinating. The picture you're talking about was in the Superdome, and Texas's starting quarterback, Quinn Ewers, who's really good, was
really good, yeah,
looking behind him because nobody was talking to him, and everybody was talking to Arch Manning, who's barely played at all and isn't probably going to play until 2025. And just think about that. Like, he came onto the field for the very first time and had to quiet the crowd at his home stadium because everybody was so excited to see him. I mean, I've never seen anything like that. And I was, you know, at school when Chris Sims was there, who came in with kind of that son of a famous quarterback, son of a Super Bowl winner kind of mantle. But Arch is just like this celebrity playing college football. And if you talk to him or hear him talk, he's very low-key, very down to earth. I'm just a guy playing football, he said at the Sugar Bowl. I'm not some hero. I'm not some football hero. But, you know, he just has that aura around him, that buzz. It's fascinating.
Yeah. And he's the third-string quarterback. I think we have to remind people of this because if you didn't know that, you would think he's the starter and he led them to the playoffs. So there's a lot of conversations to be had. Do we think there's any controversy ahead where we have like a quarterback battle? Quinn Ewers is going to come back for this Longhorns team. If the season is not on the rails, so to speak, at the start of the year and maybe they lose a game early, do you think the fans, they start to get together? Everybody loves the backup quarterback. Did they try to push for Arch Manning to get in maybe ahead of schedule next year and we see him play before many people think he will actually play?
Absolutely, we do. And I think, you know, everything we hear from people that read Texas message boards is the Mannings are patient. Don't worry. They understand they're patient. But people from the outside look at it and go, wait a second, you got the number one overall ranked recruit and he's going to sit for 2 years? That never happens in college football anymore in the era of the transfer portal. So it would just make sense that he would play next year either, whether Ewers gets hurt, Ewers struggles somehow. And I don't know. I think I would just bet on him playing significant football in some form next year.
Yeah, I do feel like the pressure is going to mount, and especially when you're in the SEC. And the SEC is fascinating as we forecast what it's going to look like next year. Obviously, Texas and Oklahoma are going to be there. Let's talk about Nick Saban, because he is the class of the SEC. He gets humbled in the Rose Bowl, loses to Jim Harbaugh, but now you lose to the eventual national champion. So it leaves a little bit of a better taste in your mouth when you talk about this season for Alabama. He talked about how they overachieve. You obviously have Georgia, who, you know, a lot of people thought they should deserve a shot to go for the third straight national championship. Where does Texas fit in the SEC? And how many leaders and kings or whatever you want to call them can there be in the SEC? Because there's a lot of people that think they're going to be in the Iron Throne or on top of the mountain.
I think a lot of teams think they're going to be kings, and there's going to be a lot of dukes. What's the level down from the king? The
prince, yeah, a lot the duke? Of dukes. There you go.
Yeah, there's a lot of dukes where it's like teams that are right around 8 wins, 7 wins that could, you know, possibly get up there. But, I mean, look at the schedule. It's I'm not much of a soccer guy, but it does have that Premier League feel where you're going, oh, man, like Texas plays Oklahoma, and the next week Texas plays Georgia. Like, these just games every week are going to be so huge. But it does feel like, and I think you're probably with me on this, when the SEC has an off year, quote unquote, like they did this year, not in the national championship game, it feels like college football almost always reverts to form the next year. Whether that's Bama, whether that's Georgia, whether that's one of these Dukes climbing up into the SEC and getting into the playoff. And I just have a feeling next year feels like an SEC year.
And we have a lot of characters in the SEC. Obviously, Sark is coming in, so he's going to add some more drama, especially with his, you know, relationships in the past with Nick Saban. But you also got Lane Kiffin there at Ole Miss, sure, who's working his wonders in the transfer portal, trying to get as many guys as he can to come down to the SIP and play for Ole Miss. Do we think that Lane Kiffin and Ole Miss can maybe take a step forward and become one of those programs in the same conversation as a Georgia or as an Alabama as we get into the new version of the SEC?
Well, the 12-team playoff, I think, is the best thing to ever happen to teams like Ole Miss. And by the way, I'd put Texas and other teams like that in that category too, where it's a real lift for them to get into the 14 playoff. They got 12, right? There's going to be a lot of those 9-3 type teams that you look at and go, you know, that's a really good team at the end of the year. Penn State's another one, could never seem to beat Michigan and Ohio State when it counts. But this year might have been on the edge of that 12-team playoff. I think those kind of programs are going to benefit greatly from starting next year.
And the other person that we kind of forget when we talk about the big-time coaches sometimes, I mean, they had the Heisman Trophy winner this year, Brian Kelly, down at LSU. He had the Southern accent. He bought all the way into being the LSU head football coach. Is there any world in which Brian Kelly leaves LSU? I mean, I know there's been some rumblings. If Jim Harbaugh was to make the jump, maybe Michigan goes after Brian Kelly. Is there another domino, a big domino that could fall where maybe an SEC coach gets poached by the Big Ten? Because this is essentially where we're headed, two super conferences in college football.
Don't you like it when people say, well, he's a Midwest guy, so of course he would go to Michigan? You're like, oh, is he such a Midwest guy that he came down to LSU, went through all that ridiculous stuff with the accent that you're talking about, right? Was crazy. was in those things with the recruits where they were on those weird rotating
dancing, right?
Oh my God, it was unbelievable. I kind of think he's bought in, right? You can change your bit once, your regional bit, but I don't think you can change your regional bit twice. So I kind of think he's gonna stay at LSU.
And I think there's a lot of videos that have shown him hamming up that accident thing. So it would be tough for him to backtrack. But if there's anybody that can backtrack and make it work, I do think it is Brian Kelly. So that's something to keep an eye on. Let's talk about the demise of the Pac-12. Obviously, Washington, there was a lot of good teams in the Pac-12 this year, but they make it to the national championship game. Now they are officially a Big Ten team. If you look at their Wikipedia, it says they're in the Big Ten. So RIP the Pac-12. Two teams left, and they're both going to be playing Mountain West Conference games next year when we talk about Washington State and Oregon State. What do we think of the Pac-12 as we look back on this conference and kind of where the missteps were to lead us to the point where they're completely demised, even though they had one of the best years in college football?
That's what's so weird about it, because I think if they hadn't, you and I would be saying, shrug, it's the Pac-12. They went out, they weren't the relevant conference like they were for the last several years. And then they had this awesome year where you look forward to seeing Washington play, Oregon, USC right until it fell apart, Oregon State weirdly good, Washington State had some great runs this year. It was just like
Arizona.
Yeah, this was the best possible version, you could argue, of the conference. And also, by the way, it was incredibly fun. Washington was an incredibly fun team to watch play. Oregon was an incredibly fun team to watch play. So weirdly, though it's gone, it leaves kind of a good taste in our mouths, which is happy, right? That we saw the best possible version of the thing as the last version of the thing.
And now we're going to all say, wow, what could have been, which is, you know, not the what people might thought, which is like, I'm glad that's over with. So yeah. Rest in peace to Pac-12 After Dark and the Pac-12 itself. I'm going to miss watching those games. Coach Prime, we only get 1 year of Coach Prime in the Pac-12. He is now advocating on Good Morning America and other shows to have more privacy around his program. What do we expect Coach Prime to look like in the Big 12 next year? Do we think he's going to get more privacy?
I'm asking those college pregame shows to leave me alone.
Affleck, leave him alone.
Go to Ann Arbor. Go somewhere right. else. Yeah, the commercials, get out of here. Those recruits that want to visit me, the transfer portal, everybody get away. You know, it's so funny because I think for, what, 3 or 4 games, he basically turned college football on its head and also told us you can build a program instantly. You don't need a couple of years to build up your lines, right? This is what we always hear. It's going to take 2 or 3 years to really get to that championship level. And then after 3 or 4 games, you're like, oh, wait, it does take that long. So I think it sort of comes down to a couple things. Dion is a program builder, which we haven't seen at this level of college football, and Dion's patience to stay at Colorado and really want to build a program there when, let's face it, something interesting could come along in the NFL, something interesting could come along somewhere else in college football. Does he want to hang in and do it in Colorado? I have no idea about that, and I'm not sure he does either.
Brian Curtis, where can we find all your work? And then we'll let you get out of here and enjoy your Tuesday.
Pressbox Podcast, ringer.com. Pressbox twice a week, man. Always good to see you, Tate.
Great to see you, Brian. Appreciate you coming to the show. We'll have you back soon.
Thank you, man. Talk soon.
Well, there you have it. Thanks again to Cousin Sal, and thanks to the Ringer's very own Brian Curtis for joining the show. It's great to be back in the saddle here, and we got some great games this weekend for Wildcard Weekend. Tune in for those. Tune in to Cousin Sal's Winning Weekend, and also tune in to Through the Ringer on Friday. We have Nora back on the show, and we're also going to have Waz on the show to talk some NBA in studio. So no Zoom look. We're going to be in studio there at Spotify, so it's going to be a jam-packed show, going to be a fun show, and we'll see you Friday morning here at Through the Ringer.